Welcome to My Child's Healthy Life, the podcast series. This series has been created for parents, grandparents, school teachers, children, or anyone involved in the raising of our kids. It is an investigation of hidden secrets, stories, and research. The question to be addressed throughout will be, how do we raise a physically healthy child in a world that is so different from the one we grew up in? This podcast series is the work of Shane Stubbs, a health and physical education teacher in Australian schools since 1988. Shane has taught over 25,000 lessons to his students.
Hey everybody, hope you had a fantastic week. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are on this particular planet and you're listening to this. I now know we've got listeners from Europe, United States, Australia, New Zealand, through the subcontinent. We've got health and physical education teachers from lots of different places, new listeners every week, and we've got lots of parents coming on board as well. And that's really exciting to me because that's the goal of My Child's Healthy Life, the Expert Secrets Roadmap. You know, I am so thrilled and excited you could join us this week for this week's episode. I'm going to introduce you to an expert in just a couple of minutes called Professor Jenny Donohue. Now, her expertise is not in the area of exercise science, not in the area of exercise physiology, not in the area of childhood physical activity research, which if you're listening to this as a parent for the first time or a health and physical education teacher, a lot of the experts that we have on are in those areas because that's the kind of thing we need to know. We need to see what's the evidence, what's going on in the world that we can go and apply with our frameworks in the Expert Seekers Roadmap with our children at home and with our students in our schools. Professor Donohue comes from a different angle. And the reason I have her on is she is a PhD in education. She's a three-time best-selling author, professional learning facilitator with over 20 years experience in leading school change. Now, we're going to be talking about a topic and a word that I don't think most parents have heard, and I know lots of teachers have, but millions of teachers haven't, and it's called, or if not a word, a phrase, called collective teacher efficacy. That's the title of this week's episode. So the first thing is, what does it mean, and why do we want to have this particular topic on the radio show, the Expert Seekers Roadmap? Here's what it is, okay? When teachers believe that together they are capable of developing students' critical thinking skills, creativity, mastery of complex content, it happens. Now, it's a bit more to it than just that. It's not that magical. Collective teacher efficacy, here's the real definition, the name and definition. Collective teacher efficacy refers to a staff's, or in my opinion, a parent's, or group of parents' shared belief that through their collective action, they can positively influence student outcomes, including those who are disengaged or disadvantaged. Wow, here's the power of this. Laureate Professor John Hattie, somebody I've been communicating with from Melbourne University over the last, I think it's nearly 4 years now. Laureate Professor John Hattie is an education researcher in what factors influence your child's successful learning or your student's successful learning. What can you do? Now, here's the really cool thing about speaking to Professor Donohue. Professor Donohue from Windsor, Ontario in Canada collaborates with and very closely with Laureate Professor John Hattie at Melbourne University here in Australia. And Professor Hattie says that of all the things he's researched, now, he's researched 300 million students across 90,000 studies. He says the number one thing that his evidence shows and proves that you can use as a parent or group of parents or a school teacher, a group of school teachers or groups of schools together is called collective teacher efficacy. So here's what's going on in my head. This is how I'm thinking before I did the interview. Right now, around the world, there are millions of health and physical education teachers. In almost all Western countries and many other countries, the grading for kids' physical activity, both elementary, primary school kids, and middle and high school kids, is somewhere between D minus and C. So in Canada, where Professor Donahue is, Dr. Donahue, it's a D minus. In the United States of America, the grading for physical activity levels of our children and teenagers, D minus. In Australia, D minus. In New Zealand, D minus. England, you're doing really well. You've scored yourselves a C, which is above us by quite a bit. Scotland, unfortunately, has an F. Wales has a C as well. South Africa has a C minus. Lots and lots of countries. What this grading is groups of professors across 49 countries. They're not just lay people, but groups of professors at university producing a report once a year from activehealthykids.org. And you can go and search this up yourself, producing a report that says these are the gradings of kids and their physical activity levels. Now, when you dig into the frameworks within My Child's Healthy Life, the book or the online course, or even here in the radio show, you'll find out the massive impact. Remember, Laureate Professor John Hattie says, know thy impact. The impact of not doing physical activity are terrible diseases that your child or your student will go on to have, more likely to go on, in one of our frameworks we call the disease funnel, and acquire those diseases when they don't have them now because of the lack of physical activity, because their score, the grades are a D minus. Our objective here is to get them higher. There's one country in the world, I think it's Slovakia, that's got an A. Well, how come all countries don't have it? And I thought to myself, how do we educate ourselves out of this problem? Surely there's intelligent people in the world who could put things in place which will allow teachers to succeed in the area of creating these two things: deep engagement and deep knowledge in raising the physical health status of groups of students within schools, or groups of students with parents, not students, groups of children with parents. So let's go on now and listen to my interview with Professor Donahue. It's not very long. We're going to talk about this thing called collective teacher efficacy, and then I'll finish off briefly about how you can use it as a parent within our framework, through the books or the courses, or how you can use it as a school teacher in your school, no matter where you're listening to in this radio show.
Most of my work centers around supporting professional learning communities in the field, really just trying to strengthen the quality of professional learning.
Right. Okay, excellent. So let me just ask that question then about collective teacher efficacy. So in your words, like, I find that a really interesting term that teachers may or may not understand, but certainly, so the radio show that we're working with here, that's going out to parents as well as teachers. How would you describe that as a term? How would you define collective teacher efficacy?
Well, collective teacher efficacy is a belief system. It's not a program. It's not something that can be implemented, because it's a conviction, it's a belief. And I would define it as the collective belief in a group's combined ability to do what's required, really, to meet a goal. So for teachers, whatever that goal is related to student outcomes, when there's a high sense of efficacy, teachers tend to believe in their combined abilities to orchestrate whatever actions are necessary to make a difference in the lives of students. Well, collective efficacy beliefs, one thing that's important to note is that efficacy beliefs are future-oriented, and they're based on past experiences, and they are very much rooted in context and situation. So I might have a high sense of efficacy as a teacher in my ability to meet the needs of students in, let's say, writing an opinion essay, but my efficacy might be lower if I have to teach kids how to win a basketball game or dribble or, yeah, you know, shoot it into a net, a ball into a net. Yeah. So they are context specific and situational.
So let me give you an example that we use in teaching here, because I don't know whether it falls under the whole concept of it, now that you're defining it in that way as a belief system. Here's something that we do at a school that I work here in Sydney, where there's about 2,000 students here in Sydney, okay? We teach health and physical education, and one part of it is not just the practical side, but it's the theory component. So we might ask students as an assessment task, or a series of assessment tasks to write essays about critically analyze physical activity and health of young people. That might be a question that we have, or we might ask them to evaluate the physical activity and health of young people. So we've come up with, through various methods, a matrix which says you have to, the first thing you got to do is name and define what you're writing about, then you have to give us an example, and then you have to answer the verb. So in this case, it could be evaluate. So if all, let me ask you this question, if all teachers in the physical education department, 16, 20 teachers, they were applying that same process, that same matrix, is that collective teacher efficacy, if they're doing the same methodology or the same pedagogy or matrix, or is it different than that from your perspective?
Okay, that's a great question. So efficacy beliefs are really formed based on sources from past experiences, and the literature refers to four sources that are really critical in the formation of those beliefs.
Yep.
And the most important is successful experiences. They refer to that as master experiences. So in your environment, in a physical education environment, where a teacher has had success in achieving a goal that they might have set in their teaching, and they've seen that it's made a difference for students, that successful experience builds their confidence in their belief about their future capability to carry out the same actions in the future. And of course, it works at both the individual and group level. So if a group of teachers have some goals that they set, and goals become really an important aspect of building efficacy, that clear, common goal consensus, and they've put the efforts forth to achieve those goals, and they've seen that their efforts have paid off, then that's a real huge source to build their future beliefs about what they can combine, what they can accomplish in a combined way in the future.
Okay, so then I'm reading some stuff here as you're saying that, trying to put this in context, because the context here is, and this is my main driving question. So here I am as a health and physical education teacher after, well, I've now been doing it for 30 years. I have a 10-year-old son. And if I look at the outcomes of school and children's health, so from the time he's 10 to the time he's 18, if he fits into the norm, and the normative data in Canada is, in fact, the normative data in Canada is identical to the normative data in Australia. If he fits into those curves, his likelihood of being physically inactive and also not understanding the relationship between physical activity and chronic disease outcomes and health outcomes as a young adult and a middle-aged adult, he is more likely to become physically unhealthy as a result of his school career than actually physically healthy. And I'm going, well, I'm a health and physical education teacher. What have I been doing? And so my question then becomes is, like, I'm trying to sit here from a collective teacher efficacy perspective, because I'm looking at that and saying, you know, in the user world, Professor Hattie and the work that you do, that has a 1.57 coefficient, which ranks it the highest, and the highest by some way from what I can read. Like, it's a long way ahead of other factors that influence learning. And my question is, how do we become and stay physically healthy for a lifetime using physical activity as the main lever through education? Because I look at it and go, well, clearly we're not doing that. We haven't. It'd be like saying, imagine all of the English teachers in a high school having kids for 6 years, and at the end of it, 80% of them can't write an essay, and they can't produce a standard of work which allows them to pass English. So I'm trying to look at it and go, well, how does collective teacher efficacy, if it's the number one influencer, how do you build that into your models of learning to make it so that, you know, we've got kids that are all thinking at a higher level and acting at a higher level when it comes to, I'll do this physical activity because I know what it means to my short-term and long-term health, which we don't have right now.
Right. Well, I think you're hitting on a couple of key ideas here, one of which is the relationship between collective teacher efficacy and the implementation of evidence-based practices. And there is, it shows, the research shows that when efficacy is firmly established or developed amongst the faculty, that they're more likely to find ways to make what's supposed to work in the research actually work in their context, in their environment, given their unique circumstances and unique student body. And so you've got this idea, this research around the relationship between being physically active and the reduction of chronic disease. I think part of it is making people aware of the strength of that evidence, you know, and that's one thing, but then the notion of utilizing or leveraging collective efficacy so that people can implement in a deep and meaningful way the results from that research.
Yeah.
And so when we think of that, when efficacy is lacking, people tend to not put forth the same amount of effort because they don't think their efforts are going to amount to much. And then you made me think of a segment from my book. You were talking about the idea of qualities and intentions. As you were talking, I pulled up a piece. It was a piece of research that was published in 2007.
Yeah.
And what the researchers were looking at was the role that collective efficacy played in empowering teachers to increase children's daily physical activity in classrooms. And they looked at 44 elementary schools, and it involved 314 teachers and 38 administrators. And what they concluded in the study was that educators' willingness to integrate daily physical activity was related to individual and collective efficacy. Mm. And where teachers have, you know, real successful experiences integrating daily physical activity in their classrooms, that idea of that mastery experience, that helped to make it, become part of their regular routine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting because I find this completely fascinating that our subject is called health and physical education. And I asked probably one of my brightest students the other day, a couple of years ago, who was just finishing year 12. I said, I'll just call her Alison, that wasn't her name. I said to her, you've just finished 6 years of high school. I had you for one of those years. And this girl was really up there as far as academic performance is concerned. I said, give me an idea, tell me what you know about how to use physical activity to be healthy. She looked at me and she thought about it pretty deeply, right? And she goes, I don't know anything. I don't understand how to do it. And I find that fascinating, that we have a curriculum document, same in Australia, but we produce outcomes which says we're getting D minuses for levels of physical activity and D minuses for health outcomes, because we all know what adult health outcomes are like across the globe. And it's like, to me, it's like we are not educating our way out of the health crisis. And in fact, if I was to define my subject, health and physical education, it's like, well, we're actually not even accomplishing the goals of the title of the faculty. That's how it appears from the data that you look at. When my child is 10 and when he gets to 18, he's 90% likely to be unhealthy and not physically active. But I really, really am fascinated by your concept of, if the teachers had success with it somewhere else, that's what improves their whole efficacy area, because they've shown something that works, it's based on evidence. And that's kind of what I was looking for, because I think that's the only way we can, you know, I think more people should be drawn into the work that you do and Professor Hattie does. Like, I can't believe that the work that Professor Hattie does has more evidence than any other education person I've ever seen in history. And I'm an evidence-based person. I love anecdotal stories, but they've got to be backed up by, well, here's what the evidence says. That's how I look at it as a lay teacher. But what I see happening in teaching is nowhere near enough people are utilizing or implementing some of the work that you and Professor Hattie and other people in your field have put together.
I think of something else too that I just want to make sure I mention.
Yeah.
When we talked earlier about the sources of FCCA, and I mentioned mastery, that idea of meeting with success being really the most important source, because it's based on a team's firsthand experience. The second most important source comes through vicarious experiences. And so that might be a group of teachers seeing another team of teachers meet with success that are faced with perhaps similar challenges and opportunities. And by seeing others meet with success, they start to build their confidence that if others can do it, then surely we can do it too.
So I think
there's room to capitalize on that notion as well in your work.
And well, you know what, Professor, that is exactly the purpose of the free radio show, because I really want people to understand that what we did here in Australia, and in like up, we've got pockets of it all over Australia right now, and we're now starting with schools in the US, that can be accomplished with our framework anywhere. So I'm really excited about exactly what you've said is exactly the target concept that I have is, hey, we've made it work here. This is why it works. Here's the evidence behind the whole framework. You guys take it and run with it. You guys go ahead and put it together like this. So that's the purpose of it. And I really want to say thank you very much for your time. And you're coming down to Australia, did you say in August?
No, it's mid-July, I think. I've got the calendar here. Let me just peek. I think it's the end of July. Let me see. I'm going to just open this up. I am there. I'm probably going to land on the 17th or 18th of July, and then I head back to the United States on the 29th. Like, a couple of my events are in Sydney, and then a couple in Melbourne, and then back to Sydney.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I couldn't. I know it's not a far plane ride, so I'll be able to handle it.
Yeah, it's okay. After you've flown from Canada to Australia, Melbourne and Sydney is not too bad.
No.
Oh, my goodness. I was going to say, I've flown to San Francisco a fair bit, and that's long enough. Let alone going all the way across the other side. Did I fly to the other side once? I think I've flown to Raleigh in North Carolina one time, but certainly not all the way to Ontario. It does certainly seems like half a world away, because I think it actually is half a world away. I really hope I can get to meet you when you come to Sydney.
Stay in touch, okay?
Thank you, Professor. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Okay,
bye.
You too. Bye.
Well, that wraps up this week's radio show, and thank you very much, Professor Donohue, and I am looking forward to meeting her when she flies out to Australia to some education conferences. That'll be some great fun. And I want to just touch on one critical thing at about the 19-minute mark of this episode that Professor Donohue spoke about. If you're a parent or if you're a teacher listening to this, here's the thing that I thought was the most interesting about this whole concept of collective teacher efficacy. One of the most important things she said was, it's not just the success that you can have where you are, but it's what's the evidence of success happening somewhere else? And can you take that success, so the stuff that we've done at My Child's Healthy Life, we have raised active heart fitness scores of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of students and school-aged children. And we're now taking that and teaching parents with the evidence that we have behind the frameworks inside the book and the course, and we're now teaching parents and teachers around the world on how to do exactly the same thing. Take this idea that the Expert Secrets Roadmap is evidence-based and it's worked, and you can take it to your local school, your school district, your own individual PE class if you want to, or your own individual home if you're a parent. And you can make it work. Hey, great week. Looking forward to getting back with you again next week. We'll have a new expert on, and I'm going out to get some more intensity blocks today. If you don't know what intensity blocks are, it's inside the framework, and it's part of the BAM 6 wheel, the very first part of the Expert Secrets Roadmap. Enjoy your week. Let's make it healthy. Let's make it fun, because that's always what it's going to be as well. But more importantly, we're doing great stuff here and being able to spread the message about getting my child's healthy life. It's not just about my child, it's about your child or your students or the people, the children and young people that you take care of. Have a great week, everybody. Bye for now.